The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Two Chunks and a Hunk, movie musings for mostly everyone. Listen as these boys attempt to unravel the clues I have so expertly hidden in this film. And remember, where there's a mystery, you can always find me, Mr. E.
Hello and welcome to Two Chunks and a Hunk. My name is Jordan Wonders, and this week I am your chunk.
I'm Doge, and at the start of the evening, Yvette was here by herself, waiting to offer you all a glass of chunk pain.
Chunk pain. And I'm Carter, and yes, I did it. I hunked Yvette. I hated her so much. It flames on the side of my face, breathing brittle, heaving breaths.
So good.
Oh my goodness.
Well, Carter, speaking of the flames.
Yeah, I noticed.
The flames of hunkdom do begin to envelop you, Carter.
Hunktitude, he glows with it.
Please tell us.
It's too bad we don't have video, because people could have seen the hunktitude there as I was soaking it in, and then forgetting that this is an audio medium. So that was just for my friends. Yeah.
Imagine Carter doing very good dancing. Like better than you'd expect.
Right. Coming from the guy who doesn't know the difference between good dancing and just dancing. But that's great.
All dancing is better than I expect.
So my hunkdom kind of came from a place that was unexpected. I have started teaching again this semester. The new semester has started for me and my professing. And one of the many precautions that we're taking is between the student and the faculty, between that podium, they are putting plexiglass screens. There's a couple of them that are movable, and they're about 8 feet tall, and they start at the floor. And so I had a moment, and it was like wondering whether or not to share it with my students, because if anybody knows the reference I was about to make, it was like, and they haven't had me before, they're like, oh, that's weird. But I've never felt more like my favorite movie character of all time, which is Hannibal Lecter. It did very much just feel like it was me and Clarice learning about persuasive communication. And
I had a little
out of body experience there. And I told them I would try not to be too into character for that. But it felt strange. It's a strange season to be teaching. Strange season to be doing anything, getting groceries. It's a strange season. But yeah, to have it, definitely a scenario I never thought would happen. And I'm wearing a mask at the same time, right? So now that's a twofer.
So what can step three be? How can you take it a step farther?
I can't think of any way to do it. I mean, it's not like there's a way to teach from home over the internet or anything like that. So there's no way to make it safer.
I'm talking about take the Hannibal Lecter thing a step farther. I don't care about safety.
I think it depends on whether...
Safety is stupid. Yeah. Silence of the Lambs is cool.
Yeah, it depends on whether or not students choose to bring a copy of Bon Appetit that I have requested.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But hopefully
maybe
it doesn't
come to
that.
Maybe a plate of beans. Maybe your lunch every day can be a plate of beans.
Perhaps some fava beans. The Texas version is like refried beans and a Dos Equis. Yeah.
Those like 99-cent ranch beans. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, dude.
I ate his liver style with some refried beans and a nice Dos Equis.
And a shatter.
Tell me, students, have the lamb stopped screaming?
Oh, and students, love the suit.
Love the suit. Goodness me. But yeah, that's the hunkdom. That's where that came from.
Hannibal.
That feels very... It feels very movie appropriate. Oh, I like that for a movie reason.
That's so good.
It was fun.
Speaking of fun,
we are going to talk about a movie. It's the first movie in our, I don't know if you heard our special guest at the start of this episode. There is a man who's been following us around. His name is Mr. E. And he has laid before us the first movie of our Mr. E series, which is, of course,
Clue.
And before we start talking about it in depth, right here, right now, I do need a synopsis from our good friend and Capitan of Explaining Things, Doge.
Yeah, break off
Dozier.
That rust, boy.
Oh, shake
that rust off of this,
off of my big book of synopsis. I was trying to think of like a Necronomicon.
Ooh.
Synopsonomicon.
For the Synopsonomicon. Synopsonomicon. Yeah. So who's your favorite Batman villain with only one half of a human face?
Oh, I would say Two-Face.
I think it's probably Joker after a rough accident, but yeah, Two-Face as a standard.
What if I told you that there was another villain?
Three-Face?
With the exact same affliction.
Three-Face. Tell me about it.
I think that's who has written our IMDb synopsis, because this is written by Two-Face 2. As in
the
T-O-O.
Sequel.
Two-Face also.
Well, no. Well,
what's the first
but
Two-Face?
But I'm also Two-Face.
But I'm Two-Face 2.
So it's T-W-O face and then T-O-O?
Mom said it's my turn to have the Two-Face.
Two-Face 2 writes, 6 guests with colorful surnames attend a dinner party hosted by a butler and a maid. All are connected in some secret, humiliating manner, and all are being blackmailed. When the blackmailer arrives, the butler reveals that he arranged the evening, intending to kill the blackmailer with his guest's help. But the blackmailer turns the tables, saying that their secrets will be exposed unless they kill the butler. The lights go out, and when they come back on, the blackmailer lies dead. But who killed him? And how?
That'll work.
That was a good synopsis.
That was a good synopsis.
Maybe Two-Face 2 should stop terrorizing Gotham.
Start writing synopsis.
Write synopsis.
Okay. Are we ready to jump into this?
Let's jump
That's
in.
Generally what comes
Do
next.
You guys have a favorite line from this movie? Like a favorite?
Mine was my quote.
Was? Yeah, it's great.
It's not the one that made me laugh the hardest, but that was my favorite.
Communism line. Was just a red herring. Gets me every
it's
time.
Very good.
I think that's hilarious.
My favorite line is very early when somebody asks Tim Curry, so you're the butler, what do you do? He says, well, sir, I buttle.
Dude, yes. My favorite, the one that made me laugh the hardest, and it was one of those that like I'm laughing hard and then Chelsea's laughing that I'm laughing so hard because it's kind of obscure. But when Tim Curry walks into, once they've gone into their parties of two, and he goes into a separate room from Madeline Kahn and says, if there's anyone in here, look out. that made me laugh so hard.
Okay, so I think the best place to really truly start our discussion is by me making a bold statement, and I don't care who knows it. Okay, I don't care who knows this.
Yeah,
I'm not going to apologize, and I'm planting my flag. This is the best board game based movie of all of them. And I don't care. I don't care who knows.
Did you see the trailers for Hungry Hungry Hippos, though?
Oh my gosh, tell me you're joking.
It stars John Cena, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and Vin Diesel.
I still can't tell if you're joking.
It's like the Expendables. They're like,
no,
genuinely, this is a real thing. It's like a military.
It's
a paramilitary force. They go down to the Congo. They're called the Hungry Hungry Hippos.
You
because
are wrong.
They look for
you
drug dealers. They gobble up all the cocaine
you
that they
lying.
Have, all the white balls they've got.
Dude, we live in a world, though, that there's enough crazy ideas
Could
out there.
Could have been real.
Tell me somebody wouldn't make that movie, though.
Could have been real. I'm gonna start for real with my super dump just to get it out of the way so that we can understand the lens through which I am talking about this movie, if that's okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my super dump for the movie Clue, the 1985 movie Clue, is how Wii Sports ready every character in this movie except for Michael McKean is. I mean, it's like gross. Like there were multiple times where I was like, oh, come on. Like everybody really
is that the joke though?
I do think that's
part
like, is
of
that
it.
An intentional piece of the satire?
That's what kind of made it feel almost like kind of Mel Brooks and kind of like Animal House and kind of like, it's 1985 too. So it's like, and I'm, the last thing I want to do is make an excuse for something that could be troubling, but I definitely dump on it. It's a kind of thing to where it doesn't feel like it ages well, especially when you're wondering like what's going on in movie business behind the scenes.
Right. I have no problem accepting the fact that it probably is part of the joke and that probably part of skewering the genre a little bit. And I hear that, but there were moments where it was just like, we can't go 30 seconds, really? Like 30 seconds without something. Come on.
No, yeah. I totally agree. I'm mostly just playing Wiimote's advocate at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of there is a lot of Wii Sports readiness here.
It's too much.
That's there's for sure.
Sensuality.
Sensual.
This is the same year as Back to the Future.
Yeah.
And also the youngest that Christopher Lloyd has ever been.
No, actually, right. So this is random. I just watched a clip of a TV show called Taxi from the late 70s, early 80s.
I grew up watching
with
Taxi.
Him in it. And he's,
you're older than I thought.
He's like a Kramer-ish character, kind of like the butt of the joke of being dumb. And he looks like, I mean, he looks super young. The early 80s were not kind to him. He aged very rapidly.
I mean, whatever has happened, and it's probably, I mean, it's definitely a lot of prosthetics to be old Doc Brown, but like, he's pretty convincingly old in Back to the Future, right? Yeah. And this is the same year.
Well, and Angels in the Outfield was only about a decade later, and he looks very old in Angels in the Outfield. So.
Yeah.
Speaking of decades, I was having fun looking at Tim Curry kind of does iconic movies every decade.
Yeah.
Because 10 years before was the Rocky Horror Picture Show for him. And I thought those might have been closer together. And talk about a difference between the sexuality. I mean, that is very intentionally supposed to be, but like Tim Curry rules Alamo Drafthouse, doesn't he? I mean, he's got,
he's got
so many of these movies that are just cult classics.
Well, he's got Home Alone in the next decade.
Yeah. Like, right. Clue lost money.
That doesn't surprise me.
Clue did not make money. It lost like $10,000 or something. It almost came back even. But then again, in the movie business, that's not even. Right. There's some more that gets factored in there. But the momentum that it gains after that is, I mean, a cult classic. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think that this movie... So Doge, this was your first time watching it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
This is my second or third time seeing this movie. The last time I remember watching it, I was very young. So it kind of was like watching it with fresh eyes a lot of the time here for me. There was stuff I didn't remember how it ended at all. And so there was a lot of stuff that felt like kind of getting to watch it for the first time. And I will say that I understand the cult following of this movie. There is something like so, so fun here.
Yeah, absolutely.
That I don't think gets tapped into a lot. Like there is almost a disregard for logic because it feels like a lot of the decision making was like, yeah, but this is so much fun. Like this is so funny.
Yeah.
This,
it's the ensemble writing. Like it really does feel like Mel Brooks, that kind of like,
except for that the dialogue itself is terrible. Like,
I disagree.
I think there are bright moments, but I think the actual written dialogue is pretty, pretty rough.
But that feels intentional.
I think overall dialogue was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah, me too.
No. I agree. And I think a lot of that has to do with who's delivering the lines and the way that they deliver them. I don't get me wrong. I love the dialogue, and that's where 90% of my laughs were coming from. It does not feel like this was an expertly crafted tight script by any means.
Oh no, not super, but it's still, I don't know. It's still so fun. My super pump. It's definitely a pump. It does feel like everyone is keenly aware that there is such an improvisational vibe to this because it is based on a board game.
Right.
It's the first time this ever happens. Right. First time and the only time anyone remembers. If there's been another one, when I read that trivia, I was like, wait, there's more? Because it said it's the first time.
Battleship. Like,
oh, wait. Oh, Battleship.
There's another clue from 2014, too.
Wait, right, really? So that happens again. And there's there's a Jason Bateman written clue in the works right now. Who knows when that'll happen?
Okay, I'm kind of into that, though, is the thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I am, too. But I think for everyone to come in, and it kind of also, what felt Mel Brooks about it, too, is like what Young Frankenstein does for horror movies. It felt like this does for the tropey mystery flick. Like
whodunit, like Agatha Christie. Yeah,
exactly. And I love that this is the first of our series.
Yes.
It's almost like this was intentional. But to come in and look... To come in and look at basically like a farce version of the mystery stuff, the fact that they're all moving together, not just at the time when Wadsworth is running them around the house and finding the killer, but anytime there's a gasp altogether, like I'm all about it. Absolutely all about it. And you start to think it's kind of a, it's not necessarily like a meta gaming, but when they're splitting people up, doesn't that sometimes happen when you're playing Clue? It's like you almost go in twos because someone else wants to go ahead and get the clue out of there before you do. It's like, I don't want you to have a head start. And I think it's, and this movie wasn't meant for everyone who's played Clue. Like it wasn't meant to be like, you remember, like if there's ever going to be a Zelda movie, a good Zelda movie, they're going to want to drop a bunch of stuff that only people who have played it know. Right. Yeah. There's going to be certain characters that you're excited about because you experienced them in a different way than somebody else did. And they meant a lot to you. But like Clue is just, it's just, let's just do it. And it seems so fun. And it keeps that vibe to me the entire time through almost every aspect of the movie.
Yeah.
So my super pump is actually the script. And I would include in that both the stage direction and the dialogue. I think the dialogue, I don't know, Jordan, I think we're just getting totally different reads on it. I think the things that you feel are weak, I get the vibe that they're intentional. Like the dialogue is intentionally kind of hammy and crappy. At least my read is that it's lower quality dialogue to lean into the shtickiness of it, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
But then the even just the direction of our actors and the way that this is all like, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but the script feels very aware that it's stupid to make a movie based on a board game.
I agree with that.
Like, and the big dramatic moment when we pull all the murder weapons out of the presence, like
that's
funny. That's hilarious because these are just the pieces from the board game.
Right.
And the writing feels like is unlike anything I've watched in a very long time.
Yeah. I feel like, and I don't want to take over your super pump. I definitely want you to keep talking about it, but it does feel like you talk about the weapons and everything coming out. It's like the thing about a Clue based movie is also they know they are not going to really upset a lot of people. No one's going to be offended. Right.
That's not canon.
People know what Clue was. Yeah. That board game has been around since like 1943. Right.
Yeah.
But no one's going to be like, okay, well, the lead pipe usually is a different tint of silver,
it's not
but whatever.
Strong enough for that.
Yeah.
When they open the presents, it feels like that works in the exact same way that in The Greatest Showman, when they're like, we should meet in tents, that doesn't work.
Right.
Like that's taking this piece that we're all familiar with. This piece we're all familiar with and are expecting in this movie. And the movie's going, yeah, it's dumb. Here they are. Here's all the murder weapons. You wondered how we were going to get them in here, right?
It's presents.
Well, they're in these presents.
No, I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the dialogue. So, just to be very clear on my stance, I do love the dialogue. I think that it works in spite of itself in most of the places that it works. And I don't know that I know enough about the people that made this movie on the production side to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that it was intentional. I think it probably comes down to the ability of, in my opinion, it seems like it comes down to the ability of the cast to deliver said dialogue in a,
I mean, they knocked
hammy,
it out of the park,
cheesy way.
Yeah.
But my guess is you and I are loving a lot of the same moments with and have drawn different conclusions about why we love
it. But
those
you credit the performers and I credit the writers.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So it feels like the biggest board game pulls that they have are the floor. Mm-hmm. The floor looks like the tiles in the board
game. And the floor
plan. And the floor plan, yes. So the same mystery rooms go to the ones that would
which
on the
is
board. Which is great. And then the little things that they get to add in terms of like everybody's car is the shade, like the color of their pawn when they come in. And so, that's just a ton of fun. And they get to do all the fun stuff of like adding an alias. This feels like the kind of source material that something that we would write together.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, but what if this? And right. that's just so yeah. fun to
Colonel
me.
Colonel Mustard is their code name because nobody can know their actual
right.
name. Yeah.
Right.
I
right.
love that.
I also think Mr. Body is very funny because the game is always, you know, a body is found or whatever. And I think that's very funny.
I think the concept, a character being named Mr. Body.
Right.
Yes. Right.
I think Mr. Yeah. Body yes. himself we'll was pretty lame, but.
Oh, no. Oh, we'll return to that.
Okay. Sounds good. I think that there's something about a movie. I mean, this has what, a 90 minute runtime at most. I think it's 91 minutes.
It's an hour and a half. It's 86 yeah. minutes. I think
it is such a short movie and there is so much crammed into such a short amount of time. And it, I mean, this whole movie is, it's an 80 minute bottle episode. I mean, it's all just in this mansion. That's it. And I just think that something is refreshing to me about that, having watched all these like epic musicals spanning, like we just finished up this series of like these yeah. large scale grand musicals, watching this small 80 yeah. minute movie where it's just like, it's just kind of goofy and fun.
That was a palate yeah. cleanser after Les Mis for me.
Yeah. Refreshing. When you have a set like this, which the whole thing was a set, except I think maybe for
the
one
ballroom
room,
was
the mm-hmm. hall. Which one was not
I think
a
it was
set?
The ballroom, like the
okay, yeah. gotcha. Was like from an actual,
I think so, yeah.
mansion. This movie just made me want to, and especially with its runtime, made me want to. If someone hadn't write this for a 1X play, or
yes, I was thinking the same thing,
or start casting my friends and be like, this would be so fun to go through. Like I imagine the cast. Like had a blast. You have to think, especially because of even if whether they are playing someone who is goofy or not, like everybody on this set is pretty stinking funny. Yes.
Well, and they're in on it. Yeah. They're all working yeah. together to get to this goal. Yeah.
Yeah. I really wonder who was cast first, right? And what was the trickle effect from there? Like who did they have to grab? I'm sure Tim Curry was way up there.
Yeah.
Because he's one of
so
the top
that's,
build.
That's who but. I was just thinking as you were saying, like, stage play, who would I cast as my friends? There's something about Tim Curry that feels irreplaceable.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And he's also, in terms of like, again, however much weight source material carries in this movie, like he's not, like he's the least fleshed out thing that right. we got, basically.
Yeah.
In terms of the main
he's functionally
ensemble.
The rule book of the game Clue. Like that's basically the role that he plays.
I mean, he says, I'm trying to find out who did this and why and where.
What?
You know, and it's like,
yeah,
that's it.
There's Clue. Yeah. And I think, you know,
I hear you saying he's irreplaceable, but I have a feeling that if you put Jimmy Fallon in a meat dehydrator for about 4 hours, he would look a little bit like Tim Curry.
He would look like Tim Curry. He wishes he could touch the bottom of Tim Curry's garment.
I think it'd be great Dang. To see the whole cast interact with him. And then he just laughs and slaps tables the whole time. I would really love that.
Speaking of casting, though, the woman that played, let me remember her name, Scarlett, Miss Scarlett. Did you know she was originally mm-hmm. going to be Carrie Fisher?
I did yeah. see that.
That is yeah. wild.
Also, this was my first watch of Clue in realizing, no, that's not Susan Sarandon.
Right. Right. Totally.
I have thought for most of my life that Susan Sarandon was in this movie, but it is most certainly not her.
Dude. Do I remember you saying something about that in...
I probably did.
What have we watched with Susan Sarandon in it?
I don't know, but I remember talking about her being in Clue, and I was wrong.
Oh, that was Enchanted, I think.
Yes, dude, maybe that's what it is.
Oh.
It's probably out there somewhere.
I think it was Enchanted. Yeah.
Can I give some breaking news yeah. really quick here on the pod? I was looking into this Clue version that is definitely in the works. It's in pre-production. Our director is the guy who did the Muppets movies, which are actually yeah. great.
Wonderful.
He also wrote Flight of the Conchords oh and has done goodness. A lot of work with Sacha Baron Cohen.
Wonderful.
Not only do we have Jason Bateman in the cast, they've added a new cast member. Ryan Reynolds
oh,
is going to be in
my
this movie.
Goodness.
Wonderful.
As well. So it's
good.
A good start. I think I'm already in with those three
I think
players.
So too.
Very
so,
much.
Clue will come back and maybe it's something we'll revisit on this podcast.
Clue 2.
The Reckoning.
Sequel
The cast member that I was the most shocked to see how much they have changed throughout the years is it's
Same.
Michael McKean,
yep.
Charles from Better Call Saul.
Michael McKean is so underrated.
Dude, fantastic.
Michael McKean is also
also Doug Forsett in The Good Place.
Yes.
The guy who figures out the afterlife system when he gets really high one day. And he's also Big Dave in Happy
Endings.
Yes,
he is Big Dave in Happy Endings.
The egg bagel.
He has aged horizontally.
I feel the same.
I'm sure we'll talk about that again during The Fugitive. Mr. Tommy Lee Jones.
Holy moly, that's so funny.
That's funny, dude.
Oh.
That's funny. I think while we're talking about the cast itself, I almost super pumped the ensemble, but I feel like Mr. Body would have had to be a part of that.
Dude sucks.
And Mr. Body, he does suck. This is basically like the lead singer of some random...
It's Fear.
Yeah.
He's the frontman of Fear.
Yeah. And boy, he was scary, wasn't he?
It's come back again, guys. I was trying to save it. He's my super dump. What a big, in a very strong ensemble. What a big swing and a miss.
Man, he's mine too. He's a big swing and a miss.
Like, I was trying to think to like play the fan casting game. It's 1985. Who would I put in that role instead of
him?
Can I
tell you who they wanted him to be so desperately? Have y'all seen Reservoir Dogs? Mm-hmm. Michael Madsen.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah. Mr. Blonde. They wanted him to be
that would have been good.
Michael Madsen so bad.
That would have been good. I think I was trying to cast him too, Doge. And so because I had Mel Brooks on the mind so much, and we'll talk a little bit more about who my favorite character is in this movie, I think they should have cast, I always forget his name. I think it would have been fun to have Peter Boyle, who plays the monster in Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I think he's also Raymond's dad on Everybody Loves Raymond. He would have been fun. Gene Wilder is too big of a pull.
That's who I landed on. I thought that Gene Wilder would be really fun for that. To me, that's a blow your budget kind of cast, though, where it's like everybody else, like Tim Curry was expensive. I don't know how expensive everybody else really would have been at this point, but like,
can't you just
let's get Gene Wilder? Like, that would be so fun.
Imagine him giving like a very much a Bloom from the producers going crazy kind of vibe when he's handing out the weapons and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, dude, he would have, but that just felt like such an easy
maybe
answer.
Too obvious.
Maybe that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we should have gone with the frontman of Fear.
But that would have been funny too, because the name alludes to this guy's about to die, but it's a little bit of a shock if you lose Gene Wilder that early in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's just his dead body. You feel like him acting like a dead Mr. Body would have been better than the breathing Mr. Body we got. Unfortunately. But yeah, that's my super dump as well. That kind of takes you out. He just felt like someone wearing red and going out with Kirk on a episode of
it really
Star
felt
Trek.
That it felt like made for TV in the mid 60s.
Yeah.
I was like, here's this guy and I don't know, his dad's the director or something.
So
as
we near the midpoint of our episode, I feel like a good way to break this particular movie up in our discussion is, so I felt, tell me how you guys felt. I felt like this movie had a clear like break point in the middle where we go from setup, all these murders are terrifying, to almost the ensemble is now exhausted with murder and just kind of wants to be done. And it becomes so much funnier at this point. But there is, it's around the time. So we get our first sort of, you know, the guy whose car breaks down knocks on the door and they're still panicking and they lock him in. I feel for me, the break point is when the first chandelier falls. They lock the traveler in the room. The first chandelier falls and everybody just kind of, they don't literally sigh, but it feels like this death is just around every corner at this point. And then it leads us to one of the hardest times I laughed in the whole movie, when the entire group of people walks by a fresh new body and just keeps walking because they're like, well, I guess that's just what happens here now.
Trying to think of the analogy, because that structure is so interesting and so ballsy to be like, we're going to build this tension. I was thinking, it's like if I'm blowing up a balloon and I've got a needle in one hand, blowing up this balloon as big as it'll go. And you're like, oh my God, he's going to pop it with that needle. It's going to be such a loud sound. I'm going to get scared. And instead of popping it, I get it as full as it can. And then I squeeze
make
the mouthpiece so that it just lets out a long balloon fart.
Yeah, totally.
And I have total confidence as a writer.
So good.
Total confidence as a writing team saying, actually, this is going to be even funnier.
The fart
it's going to be
funnier
better
than
emotional
the explosion.
Catharsis
yeah.
than the pop. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
There's so many parts of this movie that I wondered, especially with the skill of this cast, that they were like, you know what? Like, are the writers taking credit for something that the actors actually came up with?
I don't know. Like, and I think that's like what
that's our, difference here, right?
Yeah. Because that's so fun. I think it's because I love that it's a mystery.
So
Carter just sprinted away from his chair and ran a whole lap around his house.
Is there anything in the front half of this movie that we want to discuss before we step into our middle and beyond?
Yes, but it can be it's a collective for the movie as my super pump. So I can talk about it.
Yeah, let's
anytime.
Save that then. I think that's good. Is there anything front half specific? I do think with the ensemble cast, something that is so interesting is it doesn't feel like, and this is rare for especially an older movie ensemble cast, doesn't feel like we have any repeats. And by that, I mean, it feels like in this ensemble, it's very Breakfast Club-y in the sense of like everybody's very distinct here. Nobody showed up in a pair. Nobody came together. And so because of that, we get all of these super different takes, which I feel like in the 80s, especially for like women characters, it's interesting for them to be so unique because I don't feel like women got to play a drastic spectrum of character archetypes maybe in the 80s, at least not as much as they do now. And so having all of these different like character archetypes represented in this group, I think makes the stew taste that much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know that we would have gotten that in a more serious movie because some of these archetypes are just there for the joke.
Yep.
That's a huge, I feel like the writer, and again, is it the writers or is it the actors? I don't know. The movie Clue does a really great job of differentiating that and creating unique characters to be played by these colored game pieces. You know what I mean? Like giving Colonel Mustard a military backstory and you know, like all that stuff. It's just really good.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's really great. The other thing that I love is shout announcements. And it is time for that right now. Mr. E has dropped us into shout announcements with no map and no explanation of where to go next.
He has many more powers than I assumed. Having just heard his intro at the beginning of this episode, I did not know that he commanded space and time with such force and vigor.
He seems to be a Mary Poppins Eldritch Abomination type figure.
Well, this ever-defining faceless character does have something special for this series. And you'll see it throughout in every one of our episodes, but wanted to give a heads up to the listeners and especially those that chose to listen to the shout announcements. See, there's some worthiness here.
Yeah, don't skip this part.
Don't skip this part because you will find that from Mr. E, there will be given on our Instagram account, a clue or something for you to be able to answer about this week's episode. And so as we collect all of those, there'll be a special prize at the end for the first person that's able to give us all of the clues answered correctly from our entire series. So please keep a lookout for that and absolutely pay the kindest attention to Mr. E.
I didn't have anything initially to contribute to shout announcements today, but then I noticed there's an envelope that just got slipped under my door. Let me go grab it. Okay, I'm back. Let me go ahead and open it.
He's making all these noises with his mouth. It's unbelievable.
What a Foley artist.
Hey, there's a letter inside. Oh my gosh. Is that how you open envelopes? It's one of those magazines. It is when I'm under pressure on my podcast, Jordan. I open them however I can get the good letter out. And it is a letter from Mr. E written in those magazine cutouts. And it says, I need you to tell your listeners about the four ways that they can make a difference in the life of your podcast. They can support it. Mr. E says here, there are two money ways and two no money ways. Also, he says, Jordan, check under your door for an envelope containing the two no money ways. While you're grabbing that, I'm going to read you the two money ways. The two money ways that you can help our podcast is by purchasing merch from us, what we in the business refer to as a merchess, or you can become a patron of our podcast. And listen, I know it's a weird time. 2020 is a weird year. 2020 is the Jupiter ascending of years, if you will. And we understand if there are other things that you need to spend your money on, things like groceries or rent or things like causes that are worthy to support. There's a lot of stuff going on in our world and especially in the United States right now. But if you do those things, if you fulfill all the duties and then you still have money left over that you'd like to show support to us with from?
Good save.
Then merch and Patreon are great ways to do that. You can hit the link in our Instagram bio or click the tabs at the top of our website to find out how to do either of those things.
Yeah, be responsible. Get a mask with our faces on it.
Yeah, you actually can do that.
Okay, this is crazy because I just went over to my door looking for the envelope and there was none there. But when I walked back to my computer, underneath my mug was a journal. And in the journal was a ledger for a code. And the code was actually on the bottom of the mug. And let me tell you what it says.
Whoa.
After decoding with the ledger in the journal.
Boy, you are working fast.
You are working fast.
I've been preparing for this my whole life. The message does say this. Here's the two non-money ways to support the good boys, which I assume is us, the good boys.
That's really kind of mystery. Now,
one way, and it's so easy, I mean, it really couldn't be easier, is to go ahead and absolutely demolish that follow button on Instagram. I mean, bust a hole straight through your phone with your thumb. That's how hard you're hitting that thing. Follow us on Instagram. Doge works so hard on that art. It looks, I mean, scrum diddly umptious. We've got some interactivity going on in stories. That's a lot of the times where you're going to find out things first are going to be through our Instagram. So make sure you go follow that. You can also follow Twitter or find us on Facebook. I wouldn't recommend that third option. I don't even think it's up to date necessarily. but yeah, please go check out Instagram, especially during this series. We're going to have some places for you to interact with the Mr. E secret clues on the Instagram. And also, the other way, totally free, no money. So there's no money back guarantee because you're not going to spend any. The way to help us, maybe the best. Look, we are at 249 reviews. You could be number 250. In fact, I don't even want to promise that because it might happen before this episode comes out. But here's the deal. Our ultimate goal, we've said it 1,000 times. We'll say it 1,001. We're going to hit 1,000,000 reviews. And you can be a very important step in that process. So please.
You know what they always say? You don't get to 1,000,000 without hitting 250 first.
I have heard that so many times. So do me a favor. Open up your phone. It literally will take you 45 seconds. You can,
Doge. I actually think that's a. I think that's a Dave Ramsey book title.
Don't hit 1,000,000 without 250.
We're trying to hit that review snowball.
I know I've heard that somewhere. You can microwave a treat or warm up your coffee, and it will take you longer than it takes to review and rate this podcast. So please go ahead and do that.
I mean, maybe if your coffee's ice, I would be afraid to microwave room temperature coffee for that long. I mean, unless you're doing a lower power setting where you can kind of really bake so you don't coffee pop rather it, than yeah. zap it.
Hey, yeah. Do you guys see a pigeon outside your window?
Yes. And
it says there's a note hanging from its neck. Hold on. Let me go read it. It says we're done with this part.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Whoa, do you guys remember coming back here?
Don't recall?
I guess not. Mr. E's powers.
Unbelievable.
Goodness gracious.
He's done it again.
This is only week one of our relationship with Mr. E. How are we going to continually innovate when he has godlike powers by the end of this episode?
I'm starting to be afraid that maybe we hit the gas too hard, too fast on Mr. E.
Guys, is anyone else's pockets full of caramel
candies?
Mine's
just beans. Uncooked hard beans.
My pants have been replaced with caramel candies. The pockets in my caramel candy pants are full of pants.
The brand name just says Charleston
Mr. E is everything.
Mr. E is becoming the little green alien from the last season of the Flintstones.
Oh yeah, what the heck.
Okay, I am sick and tired of not talking about my super pump. I'm over.
Okay.
It.
Go.
It's Tim Curry. Specifically.
Yeah.
The candlestick
specifically,
design.
It's yes. Tim Curry sprinting around reenacting the entire evening.
Yes.
So many people do a good job of being a cartoon in this movie. But when Tim Curry is running around, he is somehow doing the thing that I expect to be accompanied with that like drum, awkward drum roll. Like,
yeah.
like when the smoke is coming from his feet.
Right. When Shaggy runs in right. place.
Yes.
It occurred to me watching this movie that I have never not liked Tim Curry in something.
Yeah.
Man, sure do love Pennywise,
He scares me very much, but he's great. And he...
He's great.
I know.
You like his role. The voice of the evil computer that the evil team in Captain Planet uses, which I think is just splendid.
And Nigel Thornberry.
Oh, that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. But I just think that he is just very funny in general, but especially as Wadsworth, man. He puts the back 40 minutes of this movie on his back and just says, come along with me, friends. And
he feels like the balloon fart that they were like, actually, it's going to be this.
Totally agreed.
Yeah.
Totally agreed. He is outstanding. And I love a lot about this movie, but it's not even close to how much I love Tim Curry in this movie. I think he is hysterical.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. My super pump is who he gets split up with.
Really?
On finding Madeline Kahn.
She's very good in this. Yeah.
I think she is so subtly the funniest part of this
She's
movie.
Very funny.
I think because I already love Madeline Kahn so much, Clue is worth a rewatch and something that I would just give to the two of you if you ever watch it again. For the group shots, just follow her. Like, just watch what she's doing. And I think she's the best at it from anybody else. Madeline Kahn, I fell in love with her with Young Frankenstein and her role there. She's also Blazing Saddles and sings I'm So Tired. Like, she is just, she feels like she walks out there and is the pro to me personally. I love how subtle it is. I think like in one of our endings, when we have them singing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow or whatever to Mrs. Peacock after the reveal, which is such a fun, awkward ending. She's the one adding these crazy parts to it. And like,
I forgot about that.
Her quote that I had at the beginning was completely ad-libbed and is like one of the favorite quotes of this cult classic of her. I hate, like, this is the first time she's broken from just being this really like, I killed my husband. You know, he lays on his back.
Flames?
She has another scene too, to where they got in there without using the door, right? It was locked and they got into the room. And who we just found out, her second husband was an illusionist. She just goes very genuinely, that's a great trick.
Yes.
Like Madeline Kahn is just leaving these breadcrumbs and these clues in this Clue movie that I think she's the funniest
that's
part
valid.
Of it. And I absolutely
that's valid.
Love her. I love her.
Specifically, I was like rolling around on the couch during her flames on the side of my face monologue.
Dude, it's so funny. It's just. She felt like she had full command of whatever she was going to do.
Yes.
And again, she's not alone. She just was the highest for me. Tim Curry was so close to being a super pump for me too. And honestly, our actor who plays Colonel Mustard had some of the best lines.
Yes.
He was just like rapid firing dad jokes probably more than anybody, but they landed
Dude,
well and they aged
when
well.
When they, after the singing telegram girl gets shot and they bring her body in and drop her from head height onto the ground. Oh my goodness. That killed me. And anytime the lights went off and everybody screams is just perfect. And honestly, with Tim Curry, and it's not just specifically about him, but the couple of times that he does a fake out of like, oh no, he got murdered. And then he jumps back up and continues his little rant. Like when he first does it for Mr. Body, falls on the ground and then jumps up, he keeps pushing Mr. Green down over and over again. When he falls out of the refrigerator and they catch him, and then he's like, and then the cook. Like, it's just.
Yeah.
But I do think I agree with you.
I want to talk about
Mr.
Green
being like the comedic heart of the last 40 minutes of this movie.
Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Green. Let's talk about it.
So Mr. Green is, and I want to see if you guys agree with this. In comedy pairs, you typically will have like the straight man and then like the funny guy, yeah. Right? You know,
yeah, or Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis.
Exactly. Or
yeah.
In like an ensemble comedy, like if we're to consider like Parks and Rec, the ensemble comedy, characters like Ben start as the straight guy where it's like everybody else is wild and I'm the only one that sees it's kind of weird that they love this little tiny horse, right?
Right.
Mr. Green feels like the closest thing we have in this movie to a straight guy because he's not quite as funny as the others. I just think it's interesting that we cast him in this sort of role where he's like a little bit able to see the lunacy of everybody right. else. But the thing that they're holding against him is that he's gay, but he's the straight yeah. guy in the group. I don't know. I may be reaching for that, but that feels like a little thing that the writers may have thrown
in. I was expecting more like homophobic hate because of a 1985 yeah. movie, and it really never, for me, ever crossed any yeah. sort of lines beyond a couple of like visual gags that I was like, all right. Like beyond that, it really wasn't. Yeah. Like the irony of him being cast with the Wii Sports icon of the movie, like him being set with her on the pair offs and like every other guy mm-hmm. wanting to be the one that goes with her to the attic, I think is very funny. Yeah.
I just wonder yeah. if there's something to, if we're going to have a, like the wordplay of the straight man of our group is gay.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, and not to get too much and derail this and talk about like homophobic hate in movies, to be honest, I had an internal like thoughts, like, well, thoughts are always internal. I was thinking about this as that role came up and also being like, oh good. I'm glad that it wasn't just like, I thought it was more disrespectful to people who were overweight than it was to,
I agree.
Like being homosexual. But it's interesting though, because, you know, we also talked about Tim Curry in like Rocky Horror Picture Show. So I don't even think the community and the normal like demographic, like politically or anything like that. Usually the movie makers are the ones who are not, if that's even included in a movie, it's more like a Three Billboards vibe or like a, it's a character in a dramatic role that's almost being like the oppressor, right. It feels right. like. And again, I don't want to turn a blind eye to when that demographic has been, you know, berated in movies as a joke,
sure.
right? That's something sure. we're totally against, but it is an interesting conversation that might come up again about the movie business in general and how they treat demographically different.
Well, and it was pretty clear that this movie,
I mean, just like everything else, not a great track record unless you're a white straight sure. dude. In movies.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think 100%. The production, it's clear that the production side of this movie, direction, writing, acting, like all of that kind of stuff, it seems to me pretty clear that it was probably written from a fairly, at the time, counterculture perspective, based on the fact that the butt of the joke oftentimes was communism and socialism, and it's being like, hey, it's 80s, got nothing to do with
yeah.
this. Like,
yeah.
it seems like that was sort of the joke of like everybody's distracted by the communism, hence we've been dropping, but really it's just plain old yeah. murder.
Yep.
Yep.
Which I think is pretty funny.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it ages well too. I think that's really yeah. funny.
It feels like we need to devote some time to the three endings. Do y'all want to start talking about that now? So the split yeah. point is when Tim Curry shuts the power off in the closet.
Yeah.
For the
yeah.
last time, right? I mean, yeah. it's funny. When I had read that trivia, I was like expecting, I was like, but that only happened 20 minutes into the, you know, it's like Mr. Body does it. Tim Curry right. does it more than once. But yeah,
when he goes into that closet with everybody standing in the like atrium of the house, the entryway of the house, when he shuts that light off, shuts that power off, that is where the three endings begin, when the lights come back up.
Right.
And they all actually start with yep. Mr. Green saying something along the lines of like, haven't we had enough of this kind of fright tonight? Like that yeah. kind of thing. So I think it is yeah. incredibly interesting and really, really fun that this movie shipped with three different endings. There was a fourth. I don't that feel like the, it means anything. Like, I don't feel like we need to talk about that, but
that is the ballsiest thing about right? this movie to me, is that like my brother lives in a different state. And so if it were 1985 and I called him and said, hey, did you see Clue? Pretty crazy that the butler did it, right? He could very validly say, absolutely not. It was Miss Scarlet. What are you talking about?
Yep.
Because we yeah. saw different movies.
Yeah. So fun.
I think that's great. I'm glad all three are here.
I think it's fun. I think it is ballsy.
Yes. Yes.
I wonder, you know, what had maybe it was over advertised and that's why it lost money in the theaters. Sometimes it's hard to look at a cult classic in the present day and wonder why it wasn't such a big deal when it first came out.
Sure.
I wonder if the different ending thing might have worked against it. Maybe. I don't know. I kept watching this and wondering what was going on. And the only conclusion I could come to is the cast is just so chock full of people that were a huge deal at that time. And maybe it just fell short. It was just not what we were hoping.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder if people were hoping for less of a skewering of the genre and more like an Agatha Christie novel set on a clue board.
Yeah. How do you look at the cast and think that's what you're going to get?
Yeah. No, that's a valid question.
You know, and maybe that's the burden of modernity though. Like where I'm looking at it and I'm able to check out the full cast of a movie before I go see it, you know, and able to like really quickly pull up, what else has Tim Curry been in? You know,
right. Yeah. That's a good point. No,
I didn't think about that. Sometimes I've had the IMDb app. So the IMDb app is one of my most used apps on my phone, like by far.
Yeah.
And I've had it since I had a phone. Like I got a smartphone, and day one was like, "There's an IMDb app. That's great."
The app was already on it. Weirdly enough.
Yeah, it came, Mr. E again.
Goodness gracious.
But I think sometimes it's easy to forget that like it hasn't always been this easy to just be like, what's the 1,000 things this person's been in, ranked in order from most recent to oldest, which is great. I'm glad we have that tool now. Do y'all have a favorite ending of the three?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which one's your favorite?
My favorite is that Mr. Green works for the FBI.
Yeah, me too.
I think I enjoyed that one the most.
I love that one. That's my, I don't know. I kind of like all three of them. I think my favorite is Mrs. Peacock is the murderer.
That one is so goofy. I love that.
The fact that Wadsworth was working for J. Edgar Hoover the whole time and like bringing them all in to find Mrs. Peacock is so great.
That's fun.
Like I love the police chief busting in and just being like, you got him, Wadsworth, you did it. I just think but also I think Mrs. Peacock was lost on me for the first half of the movie. I don't think I started to appreciate how over the top and hilarious she was until
like
close
what
to
she
the
was
end.
Doing. Yeah.
And so when she got her time to shine in that finale, like holding the gun and backing everybody up and we all leave one at a time.
Oh, her
and
whole demeanor changes
first. It's so good.
Yeah. I wonder if like, so that was probably my least favorite.
Oh, really?
Because it felt so unexpected.
Totally. Yeah. No, there is nothing telegraphing that at all.
But if the movie had ended right there, I think I would not have enjoyed. I would have been like, oh man, that was a bummer. That didn't feel earned. And I wonder if that word of mouth is what hurt the, like, I wonder if this movie really only works if you see all three.
That could be it.
That's kind of what I was getting at when I was saying, you know, I wonder what if that was one of the big downfalls of losing money.
Well, and I think the only reason
I didn't understand what you're saying
like that ending is not because it works, but because of how fun it is. And I think if that was the only ending, I honestly might not like it.
If that was the only thing you saw? Yeah.
Because I think Mrs. Scarlet or Miss Scarlet and then the Wadsworth is the murderer are actually better endings as far as like...
Yes.
If that was the only ending to the movie, I would prefer one of those. But when I get to see all three, my favorite one, like if I had to pull one up and watch it on YouTube right now, it would be the Mrs. Peacock ending again.
Yeah. But I wonder, fully 33% of the people that saw this movie in theaters got the kind of jokey Mrs. Peacock ending.
That's valid.
Right.
That's valid.
Yeah.
And it's just a shot in the pan of hoping that that's the kind of people that enjoy that kind of humor. I think... what sealed the Mr. Green ending for me in terms of him being a member of the FBI was literally asking who done it and everybody pointing to somebody.
That is
different.
Great.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
And the fact that he solves the game of Clue, that he says it was Wadsworth in the wherever with the revolver. You know what I mean? That he's able to clearly distill the purpose of the game
that
right there.
That feels like if there's one ending that is quote unquote canon, that feels like the canon ending to this story. Wadsworth.
I mean, that's how it's introduced. The title card says, but here's what really happened.
Right. And it makes a lot of sense out of Mr. Green being so sure the entire time that he had nothing to do with it. Like, all that kind of stuff is very interesting. And that J. Hoover phone call was for me. It's so great.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. I don't remember who it was, but somebody's asking Wadsworth, so is it just the FBI's business to go around cleaning up after
says,
people?
Yes.
And he goes, why do you think they're led by a man named Hoover?
Oh, that's so good.
So
wonderful.
So many good jokes.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's what I'm saying about all the like communism jokes is like it does feel like this movie was very clearly like poking fun at Red Scare, poking fun at like FBI involvement in like conspiracy cover-ups and murders. Like
sure.
And it feels like it was punching up in a way that made it feel very comfortable to laugh at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of has that some of that cockiness of like American film. That's just like we're gonna poke fun on a grander scale.
Yeah.
With that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I do wonder if this movie, man, I wish I could erase my memory and only watch. Apparently the DVD version has an option to pick a random ending. So you could watch the whole thing
and
just whatever ending you get to the one you get. And I think I would love to erase my memory and watch it just with one of the endings and see how
just
I feel about
ending.
It. Cause now that you've brought that up, I can't get that out of my head that this movie been cursed by such an ingenious idea that only works if you're in on the joke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, a definition of a cult classic, it feels like, is one that gains momentum after it is long gone from theaters. And so for that, I mean, that coincides with getting a version that has all three. And then all of a sudden people are like, this is great. Because you get the creativity of three different endings to see them all at once. And then also probably what you might be most satisfied with.
Yeah. I think the ending, the fact that I got to see multiple endings helps me look at this movie through the lens that the team behind it, I'm not going to credit writers, I'm not going to credit actors, the team behind it intended, which is to say the solution doesn't matter. You need to have fun along the way and laugh while we're doing a really thorough send up of this type of storytelling. And if I'm only presented with one ending, I think that is me expecting them to still pop the balloon and still give me a little bit of what I'm expecting of, oh, I can't believe you put it together that way. But I never had that moment last night while I was watching it. None of the endings gave me the, oh my gosh, it all makes sense moment. It was all like, oh, that's really funny. That's hilarious.
So watching for the first time, did you know it had three endings before you started it?
I didn't until I started to see the second ending. And then I was like, oh yeah, this is the movie
that's what I did too. It finished. I was like, I don't remember that being how it ends. And then it said, or this could have happened. And I was
maybe
like,
this
oh my gosh, Clue's the one with three endings. I forgot. Man, I feel like we are cursed with the inability to erase memories.
Well, I bet Mr. E can.
There's little he can't do, but I think we're running into right now the same reason that Carter bought the Phantom Menace poster and I bought the Revenge of the Sith poster. It's just like, man, it has become something that it wasn't.
Sure.
You know, in the year since it
released. That's a good point. This is such an interesting first movie for this series. And obviously, like, we picked it.
I think it's perfect.
But
I think our bookends are perfect.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, this sets us off a strange path. This series is going to be a winding road. Sorry, Mr. E picked it. We didn't pick it. But this is going to be such a fun journey through these, like, because I mean, we are taking the label of mystery to its different ends of the spectrum here. I think
it is loose
till it's literal. I mean, it's literal.
It's going to be awesome. But I think it is time to rate Clue. I think the best way to rate this movie is using Mrs. White's late husband's favorite hobby, science, the scientific cinema scale. But unfortunately, to be a part of this twisted adventure, Mr. E has informed us that we're not allowed to read the scale. So I guess we just see what happens.
The best thing they could say about this movie is own it, don't lend it. Buy that poster. The next best thing is buy it, followed by rent it, and then stream it. Almost the worst is forget it. Lastly, and worst, God hath forsaken us.
Thank you, Mr. E, and thank you to Jordan, who is me, for going first and volunteering to take the plunge. So before I started this movie, before I hit play, my estimation, my assumption was that I would stream or rent this movie. Y'all, I'm buying this movie. It is so close to a poster, weirdly. Like, I was not expecting to love this as much as I did, based on how I felt about it watching it as a kid. I just think it went over my head as a kid. This movie rules. I'm buying this movie. It's a hard, easy buy for me.
I'm going to buy this one as well. It was honestly a forget it until they started to let the balloon fart instead of popping it.
Sure.
And then I realized, oh, that's right. What this movie is? I'm very right. into that. So this is going to be a buy for me as well.
I'm going through this fun thing that happens very naturally and had happened well before a podcast existed, to where I would specifically talk with this group and wonder what my opinion is. Like, have something in mind, and then the 1 hour that it took to record everything, like, things totally. Change. That's happened to y'all too on this episode,
yeah.
right?
Big time.
Like,
yeah, you guys have changed my appreciation in both directions for a movie as we have talked about it. Like, I have felt.
Which reminds me, there's some more stuff I want to talk to you about with Les Mis.
Guys, I'm going to go ahead, and this might be the first time that I've had. No, it's not. I had the lowest rating on Revenge of the Sith. I'm going to have the lowest here, and I am going to go ahead and rent it. I think it does not have any kind of massive influence on me. But for me specifically, I did find myself, because I went so Mel Brooks thinking about this script, enjoying anything Mel Brooks has done infinitely more. And that this one was just a blast. Man, what a great choice for a dinner party to watch if we're going to watch a show together.
Yeah.
There's such good. I would go to the. I'm interested in going and seeing it at Alamo Drafthouse if they ever have another fun interactive night. But it's just, in comparison to some other things like it, it's not top tier. But I sure love it. And it's got a ton of rewatchability. It's weird for me to have something with so much rewatchability be rated this low. But it is a rent for me.
What I'm hearing is maybe it's a little bit more like a Walmart brand Mel Brooks movie, where it's like, this is kind of the same thing, just not
quite.
See,
I almost don't even think it's... Right. It definitely has some of that Mel Brooks flavor. Like, there's no doubt about that. But it does not feel, to me at least, like a genre copycat necessarily. Clue feels...
No,
I think it's probably a tone, a vibe copycat.
Yeah, maybe.
But it also stands alone.
Yeah. I mean,
Clue feels like it's on its own.
It's not Dr. Pepper, it's Dr. Thunder.
Clue feels like it is pretty firmly... its own thing, and yet not at all. I don't know. It's weird, man. I really was shocked at how much I loved this. And also shocked at how wrong my memories of it from childhood were.
This feels like if I had watched it as a kid,
I don't think I cared for it as a kid.
Yeah, it leans more adult.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing exciting that happens visually. So unless you're keeping up with dialogue...
Just like there's nothing interesting visually, there's nothing interesting in us continuing to rate this movie after we've already.
I think it's interesting.
Says you.
Well, you guys want to record a couple of different endings?
Oh, that would have been good. We should have done
which one they think is our real rating.
iTunes gets one. Spotify gets one.
The technology.
Google Play gets one.
Oh, we don't have that kind of technology.
So we can't rebuild them, huh? Well, this is the first week of our 5-week series, Mr. E, where he is dropping clues in movies left and right for us to follow the trail and find out something, I guess.
Let's step outside the Mr. E bit for just a second. Pay small attention to the man behind the curtain. What a stupid name.
No,
for
it's
a
so
character.
Good. It's so good. I love it so much. Hey, thank you for joining us. You know, like I always do at the end of every episode where I say thanks to you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us, everybody.
Listeners,
home
next week,
be sure to tip
next
your servers.
Week we will be reviewing the David Fincher film Gone Girl, starring
pretty similar
Benjamin,
to this one.
And mm-hmm. is it Rosamund Pike?
Very.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes, sir.
What a trip that movie was the first time I saw that. So we'll be reviewing that next week. Make sure you tune on in. And do we have anything else that we need to drop at the listeners' feet before we close down shop?
Nothing that would,
tell your friends and
not,
your enemies.
Not ruin their shoes.
Tell your friends and
tell
your enemies about our show. No matter who's in your life,
tell
them about our show.
Moms love us. And
that
is
true.
Speaking of somebody who has a mom, she's pretty great. I'm a big fan of moms. I think moms are great. They're the backbone of this country.
That's also true.
So, tell your moms, tell your mom's friends about us. They'll love us. To end today's episode, I'd like for you, for each of us, to say our name and to cast our mother as a role in this movie.
Oh, what?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. This is weird.
This is hard.
This is Two Chunks. That's our new slogan. This is weird.
This is
weird.
This is hard.
Two Chunks in a Hunk, I'm Jordan Wonders, and Donna, my mom, Donna's going to be the police chief that knocks on the door and gives the Jesus flyer to everybody. That one's Donna this time. Good job, Donna.
I'm Doge, and my mother, Jennifer, will be playing the role of Mrs. Body because she loves people and wants to make sure they're having a good time. And that would be a much kinder energy to bring to this character.
Just sort of like the consummate host. I'm Mr. Body. Miss Body's like, not,
oh, yeah. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to my home. It's a little, I mean, we didn't get to pick it up that good, but like you can sit here on the couch. It's really nice. I have some snacks coming for you.
I'm going to die here pretty soon, like within the next few minutes. So it's okay.
But it's okay. It's okay. As long as you have a good time. It doesn't matter to me. I might die, but it's okay. Mom, if you're listening, that was not a send up. That was not directed at you in any way.
I don't know. His face, you can't see him, but his face looked mad.
You're going to be in Trevor. Again, I'm Carter, and my mom, Deanne. That's right. There's an apostrophe in her name. Talk about a mystery.
I thought it was the Anne this whole time.
Deanne. I honestly feel like my mom would have the most fun playing Mrs. White. So as much as Mrs. White is my super pump for this movie, my mom is my super pump for this life, you know,
tears, real tears.
But, I think I honestly can see my mom doing a good job of playing that role and doing her own ad lib for certain things and acting like she's had five husbands. I think she'd have a blast with that. And it gives her a little bit more time with Tim Curry,
which is always good.
Just the one-on-one. And so she would have loved that.
Listeners, be sure to check out our mom's podcast they have together. It's called Our Kids Started a Podcast, The Three Moms Story.
Oh, I wish we just had a cut of all of your titles that you come up with.
You would like a cut of my Hannibal Lecter.